they won't do. They're not going to ban e-cigarettes. That's one thing. They have committed, the government in the UK has committed to this the Swap to Stop campaign, which is whereby they'll entice smokers by giving them an e-cigarette instead. So they're still doing that, but they're attacking just about everything else. And I think we haven't got particularly good MPs at the moment. We've got a new government. We've had 350 new MPs, who some of them I've heard can barely find the tea room, and yet they're passing legislation like this. And they really haven't got much of a clue about vaping products or nicotine pouches or anything else. So they're now going to install a tax, which is probably going to be the biggest tax in Europe on vaping liquids. They're having a ban on disposable vapes, which is coming in this year. They're talking about, with the tobacco and vapes bill, which is going through, they're going to be banning some flavors. They're going to be sticking vaping behind screens where no one can see them. They're talking about vape-free areas, you know, places where you can't use a vape. All of these things really basically just to treat vaping almost exactly the same as smoking, banning vending machines, banning advertising, the lot. And it's really come about because they just believe stuff they read in the media. There's so much misinformation around, and MPs have unfortunately just taken it.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Vaping Unplugged podcast. Everything you need to know about vaping and tobacco harm reduction.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Lisa. I'm going to be your host today. And this is yet another episode of the Vaping Unplugged podcast, where we discussed vaping policies, and not only vaping policies, but also the policies around the less risky nicotine alternatives all around the world. We discuss how consumers react to those policies, what are the challenges that consumers face. And today we will be talking about a bunch of things, including the situation in the UK, FCTC, WHO, with a very interesting person who's at forefront fighting for vapers and more rights to consumers and more choice for consumers. This is Martin Kalib, International Fellow of the Taxpayers Protection Alliance and former chair of New Nicotine Alliance. Martin, thank you so much for making it to our meeting today and to this conversation. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Lisa.
Absolutely, it's our pleasure. So before we dive into discussing various topics, I just wanted to ask you to maybe tell our listeners a little bit about yourself as well, just in case they probably know you already, but anyways, it would be nice to give a short intro on how you became involved in vaping and tobacco harm reduction world generally, and what's your journey?
Yeah, I've been talking about this kind of subject for a long time now. I think it's from about 17 years, 2008. I first tried an e-cigarette when they were very new, around 2009. And I was involved in some of the early campaigning where literally from the moment they were invented, consumers have had to fight for the existence of a way of getting off smoking. It's bizarre to think about that 17 years we've been fighting this battle. And the first battle we had in the UK was when the Medical and Healthcare Regulatory Authority wanted to ban vaping within 21 days, within 3 weeks, basically. And there was a huge response from vapers who sent their stories on to the consultation. I think it's 1,200 replies, and they didn't do that. They said they're going to look into it more closely. And then we had to fight against the Tobacco Products Directive with the EU. That was around 2012 onwards. And it's just been constant since then, really. We've had people using vape products to quit smoking in their millions. And every hurdle and every attempt has been met by horrible anti-vaping people who are just trying to take these products away from them. So vapers are fighting for public health, and strangely, people who call themselves in favour of public health are fighting against public health, and that's the way it's always been since. So that's how I came into it, and I'm still going now, 17 years later.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough fight. We're facing a lot of back and forth with this, and there is a lot of misinformation as well around vaping and other less risky nicotine alternatives. Let's move on to the UK, since you already mentioned your work in the UK. So we always use UK as the leader in harm reduction policies. We all know about NHS, where you can go and read all about vaping and how it can help you with smoking cessation. However, there has been a shift on policies in the past year, and I think it would be nice if you could discuss what are the latest developments regarding vaping, and not only vaping, but nicotine pouches and other are alternatives when it comes to their legislation. And do you see that there will be threats or challenges to this kind of UK status of being progressive on harm reduction?
Well, one thing they won't do, they're not going to ban e-cigarettes. That's one thing they have committed. The government in the UK has committed to this, the Swap to Stop campaign, which is whereby they'll entice smokers by giving them an e-cigarette instead. So they're still doing that, but they're attacking just about everything else. And I think it's, we haven't got particularly good MPs at the moment. We've got a new government. We've had 350 new MPs, who some of them I've heard can barely find the tea room. And yet they're passing legislation like this. And they really haven't got much of a clue about vaping products or nicotine pouches or anything else. So they're now going to install a tax, which is probably going to be the biggest tax in Europe on vaping liquids. They're having a ban on disposable vapes, which is coming in this year. They're talking about, with the tobacco and vapes bill, which is going through, they're going to be banning some flavors. They're going to be sticking vaping behind screens where no one can see them. They're talking about vape-free areas, you know, places where you can't use a vape. All of these things really basically just to treat vaping almost exactly the same as smoking. Banning vending machines, banning advertising, the lot. And it's really come about because they just believe stuff they read in the media. There's so much misinformation around, and MPs have unfortunately just taken it and read. They've read things in the Daily Mail or the Guardian, and off they've gone. You can tell that from when they have their hearings and committee meetings. Some of the things they say, they're basically treating vaping exactly the same as smoking. So they do understand that vaping can help people get off smoking, but that's all they want it to do. They don't want it to do anything else. And what they're going to do with all these, and you know, consumers have been telling them this. They've in fact, their own impact assessment has said that probably about 29% of people who vape will go back to smoking. Their own impact assessment said that, and they're doing it anyway. So it's just really an ideological thing, and it's because of all the misinformation they've read, and they're just people who are just not really thinking straight. So unfortunately, yeah, we're not going to be a world leader anymore, and we will probably have more people smoking as a result. But again, it's what we were saying with the first question. It's yet again, consumers can talk to the politicians as much as they like, and they're just not listening. And in fact, they certainly weren't listening with this, because they didn't even bother to consult consumers when they were drawing up the bill and asking for evidence. So unfortunately, that's the way it's going. But, you know, there are some countries where vaping is banned. So at least we're better than that.
Yeah, I mean, but it's also sad to see this kind of shift. But at the end of the day, we'll hope that there's still hope that policymakers will start listening to consumers and people for whom vaping has changed a lot. And we always encourage those who follow us or those who see our posts on social media to actually reach out to their local policymakers and talk to them and tell them about their stories. You maybe just an extra question on the UK. You've mentioned a lot of misinformation, and you also mentioned how policymakers are repeating. You can sense that they are reading through all this misinformation. And most recently, there was this article published by Mirror, and which caused a lot of, it was a scandalous article, I would say, around vaping, and very misleading and misinformative. It's my stance, but I would like to hear yours as well, obviously.
Yeah, well, it is amazing. This wasn't even a study. It's not a study. It's not completed. It wasn't even presented as a poster at a public health conference. It's nothing. It's not been published. It's not been peer reviewed, and yet MPs were eager to accept it, saying, "Well, now we have proof." You know, there were something like 40,000 studies, and they'd be saying, "Oh, we haven't had enough evidence. We don't know what's the long-term harms." And then one bloke gets people walking on a few treadmills up in Manchester, and they say, "Oh, now we have proof." And in fact, one of the MPs in the article said that, the MP for York, who's a quite ridiculous MP, in my opinion. She wants the national speed limit to be 10 miles an hour, for example. But she said, no, well, now we have the proof that the vaping is worse than smoking. And then the very next day, we had another article in Daily Telegraph saying that nicotine pouches are worse than vaping. So by their logic, nicotine pouches are worse than vaping. Vaping is worse than smoking. So you might as well just carry on smoking. It's just utterly ridiculous. But this is what I'm saying about these MPs. They don't look in the mirror occasionally and think, what I'm saying is utterly ridiculous. It's obviously not true. And yet they don't seem to be able to recognise that in themselves, which is quite frustrating.
Yeah, definitely. And it causes a lot of harm to public health overall then, eventually. So we've been talking about misinformation, and probably it's time to move on to our next topic, which is WHO. If you go to the Q&A of WHO and read about vaping, the Q&A is quite already misleading for the person who wants to learn more, because they don't specify the they don't differentiate the risk between combustibles and vaping, for instance, and that's already really misleading and kills the incentive for people to switch. And you've been following and monitoring WHO's work on this very closely. You're one of the leading experts on that. So let's talk a little bit about that, because recently FCTC was celebrating its 20th anniversary. So my question is that maybe you could talk about what was done in those 20 years and maybe what has gone wrong and what could have been done differently.
Yeah, the WHO talking about misinformation, well, it's the mothership of all misinformation, isn't it? It's all emanating from the WHO. And we know why that is, because most of their money comes from private donations, which come with strings. And most of the people that donate to them just don't like vaping, like Michael Bloomberg. And we know that. The 20th anniversary, they've sent out some lovely items for people to help tweet and say how successful their 20 years is. Lots of young, bright faces smiling. But in the 20 years, they've done literally nothing. And even people who were involved in writing the treaty 20 years ago have raised their concerns. Professor Robert Beaglehole, he was on the committee and with Tobacco Free Initiative when they started writing this treaty, and he said it's not fit for purpose. So for them to say we've got 20 years of success is quite laughable, to be honest. And the problem they've had is that instead of concentrating on reducing smoking, which is what the FCTC treaty is supposed to be doing, they've now morphed it into something where they just want to attack industry instead. So that's the fatal flaw they're getting wrong, which is why they won't accept any other products apart from things that, you know, pharmaceutical products. And they won't accept vaping, they won't accept nicotine pouches or anything else. So that's where the assault's coming from. And it's not going to change because of the people that are funding them. And they're so in hock to the people who are funding them, they can't get out of this attitude, and they can't get out of the attitude that they're supposed to be attacking industry, when what the treaty was supposed to be doing and what it was written to do is to help get people to quit smoking and reduce the harms of tobacco smoke. So I don't know, it's going to change. We've got COP11 coming up. There are more countries standing up to them and saying, look, this isn't what you're supposed to be doing. So we can only hope that more countries do that in the upcoming COP meeting in November.
Yeah, actually, that was my next question. So could you elaborate on that a little bit? Because it's going to be important. And I want to tell listeners that last year, the people who are well-known about the harm field and passionate advocates for harm reduction generally were not allowed to COP10 in Panama, and Taxpayers Protection Alliance organized a lovely conference, Good COP, Bad COP. We were all there and we were trying to spread the voice, because this voice still exists, right? And it's very important that in some form it's out there. So for COP11, what are your expectations? Is it going to be the same? Are the consumers not going to be allowed there again? Is it going to be only like chosen NGOs and some of the parties? Or how do you perceive the process, and what are your expectations for COP11?
Yeah, it'll be the same stuff again. They won't allow anyone in. In fact, they've got stricter now. Last COP, where they said you have to apply 60 days in advance, whereas you used to be able to turn up and go into the public gallery, which I've done on a couple of occasions. So they're getting harsher, and it's because they're being they're being challenged. You know, this one is going to be in Geneva. I remember the last COP in Geneva in 2018, and you could go up to the venue. In fact, we went into the venue. Me and Chris and I went in and did some filming in there. Because that's the way it should be. It's a WHO meeting. It's the, we pay for their wages. They should be allowing us in, that they're not. But I expect this year they'll probably close the road off. They've got bar entry even to that, because the carnage, the absolute nonsense they had in Panama when some people from Brazil went along and some consumers tried to get in, and they had you know, military there trying to stop you getting in, just to listen to what they're saying. It's, what are they scared of? Well, they know that they're doing wrong. They absolutely know they're doing wrong. And they're going to be doing the same thing again. They had a very frustrating COP10, and they're going to be going for the same targets. They want to recommend to ban or equalize regulatory and fiscal rules about heat tobacco products, vapes, nicotine pouches. They want to treat them exactly like cigarettes, basically. They want to ban all flavors still, maybe flavor and agents. They were talking in one of their COP10 reports that they want to redefine what the word smoke means. And now they've got Article 2.1, which is the forward-looking tobacco control measures. So they'll be pushing generation age bans, reduction in point of sale, licensing, ban on filters for cigarettes and stuff. And they still haven't defined what they consider harm reduction is. They just keep saying, oh, it's not, harm reduction isn't what consumers think it is, it's something else. Well, what is it? Well, we don't know. Harm reduction for them seems to be bans and taxes. Well, that's what they're doing already, and it's not working. You know, the FCTC treaty came in 2005. There were 1.1 billion smokers in the world. Now there are 1.3 billion smokers in the world. So until such time as they wake up and realize that most of the reductions in smoking around the world in the last 10, 15 years have been because of reduced risk nicotine products, we're not going to get anywhere. And they're not going to get anywhere because they won't discover that if they don't recognize that the treaty is supposed to be about reducing smoking and harms from tobacco smoke. It's not meant to be attacking nicotine, and it's not meant to be attacking industry.
Yeah, let's see how it's going to go. By the way, what do you think about the U.S. Leaving WHO? It's been a big news with the new administration in the USA, and we had also a podcast with Clive Bates talking about that, possible cons and pros and cons around that decision. So what do you think about that? How is that going to proceed?
Well, it's an issue that kind of divides people, even amongst consumers like us. We know how bad the FCTC is. It's an awful what they're doing with the FCTC. And I wrote a paper recently with a guy called Roger Bate from the International Center for Law and Economics, where we argued that because the WHO can't handle the FCTC treaty properly, why should we give them more power to have a pandemic treaty, which is what they currently want to do? But there are people who disagree. I know Clive Bates disagrees. He says, you know, you need some organized health authority across the world. And I get those arguments as well. I really do. But they're really not showing the best of themselves with the FCTC. And if I was in the WHO, I'd be deeply embarrassed by the FCTC secretariat and the people who administer the FCTC treaty, because it doesn't make the WHO look very good at all. And of course, the WHO did mess up with COVID. Everyone knows that. So they really have got to get their acting gear, and they don't look like doing anything close to that currently. So I can see why people want to leave the WHO. But also there's other people who argue that maybe we just need to reform it. But it has to reform. It can't carry on like it is, because it will just lose more and more trust.
Yeah, let's say it like that it caused a lot of controversy even among our circles. So those who usually are opposing WHO on the tobacco or mostly like harm reduction and vaping regulation and general lifestyle regulation. But one thing is for sure, that they should reform this. As you said, there should be a shift and change in that direction, at least, because they have been completely counterproductive on that part, at least. Let's talk a little bit about the misinformation as well, because you've mentioned in different aspects in the UK or generally, and that also WHO is fueling this misinformation. So what do you think, let's consider, how can we fight it, first of all? And maybe as a background, what kind of effect does it have on the legislation, and then the legislation on people's lives eventually? It's like a circle.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said earlier, in the early battles against people who were attacking vaping, it was consumers that made the difference. It was those 1,200 consumers who wrote to the MHRA in 2010 that stopped vaping being banned. It was the consumers who petitioned and went to Brussels. I was in a group of people who went to Brussels. We blew up black balloons, chanted "e-cig save lives" and everything, and it caused a fuss. And some MEPs, brave MEPs, came out and spoke to the people and understood the situation. So the consumers, I'd say, are still the most powerful voice, and they've got to make themselves heard. If that means whatever it means, just write to your elected representatives, you know, take part in consultations, give money to consumer organizations so they can fight on your behalf. Any of these things really matter and they really help. But just the one thing is, just don't give up, because when you talk to people who've been involved in harm reduction surrounding drugs, and I spoke to many of those people at conferences, they say, we've had the same issue with WHO. They were anti-drugs harm reduction for years and years, viciously so. And in the end, they were made to wake up, and now the WHO does accept harm reduction for drug use. So they seem confident that in the end, consumers will win, because at the end of the day, all the evidence points in our favor, all the major evidence. And the other side has been trying, study after study, to try and find some way of attacking vaping. And they still haven't found the silver bullet, because at the end of the day, vaping is a fraction of the harm of smoking. And millions of people are using it to quit smoking. At the end of the day, they can't get past that basic fact. So unless you're going to create one of the biggest black markets the world has ever seen, which would make prohibition in America look like a tea party, to be honest, you're going to have to at some point accept that vaping and other safer nicotine products exist. And as Mike Siegel said so many times, he thought 10 years ago we'd have seen the end of smoking by now. The only people who are keeping people smoking at the moment are people in the World Health Organization and people who claim to be interested in public health. And they're doing it simply because they don't like industry, and some of them don't like being unemployed. Because why do you need those people if people are just quitting smoking by going and buying themselves a vape? So a lot of it is just self-interest and pointless politics and playground posturing by these people. But at the end of the day, all the science is in our favor, all the major organizations are in our favor, you know, the FDA, British government, the NHS, all around the world, these organizations who are in charge of governments have said these things are far less harmful than smoking. So let them do what they can do and help people quit smoking. That's all they have to do, just stop all this misinformation and this mischief, and get on with helping people quit smoking by endorsing those products.
You've mentioned that, like what you're saying right now, that we have all the evidence is on our side and eventually the consumers will win. But that probably also requires a fight, because right now in the following year, we see that there are a lot of different counterproductive policies around the world. For instance, Bulgaria is banning vapes right now, is in a process. Let's see what will come out of it. But it was like very tough and harsh decision on their side, because it even stricter than the EU level legislation. So there will be legislation policymakers fighting for that probably, and consumers should fight back in that sense. So as my last question, I would like to ask you, what would be your message to people who care about vaping, who use vapes or other safer nicotine alternatives to quit smoking, and how should they basically fight this?
Well, the first thing is I say it all the time, we're on the side of the angels here. We're the ones fighting for public health. The people who are against us are not interested in public health. They're doing it for their own reasons, but they're not interested in public health. So never think you're on the wrong side. Don't demonize yourself, because you're not. You're fighting for the right thing. So always carry that in mind. And when you said about Bulgaria and these countries that ban, well, they can ban things, but that's not going to make it go away. And like I said, if they just want a big black market, then go and ban things, because you know they always mention about threats to youth and things like that. Well, they've got the laws already to stop youth using these products, and they haven't worked. So why do they think a ban is going to just get rid of vapes? It's not. It's not going to get rid of nicotine pouches. It's not going to get rid of anything. I mean, in just in Greater London alone, there are about 100,000 people who use snus in the UK, and have been banned in the whole of Europe since 1992. So you won't ban these products. The best thing you can do, if you really are interested in public health, is to somehow make these the chosen nicotine product over and above combustible tobacco, which is the one that you're supposed to be fighting. So I would say to consumers, you know, get involved in your local organizations, get involved with consultations, get involved by writing to your representatives, and just show that you're still there and you're not going away, and nor are these products, because people will use nicotine. They will always use nicotine. Nicotine's been used. Archaeologists have found nicotine traces of use of humans 12,000 years ago. So nicotine will always be used. So the best option you have is to make sure that the form of nicotine used is the safest one possible. And you're not going to do that by banning the safer products and leaving the dangerous ones still on sale everywhere.
Well, definitely. I couldn't agree more with what was said. Thank you so much, Martin, for your interview. It's been a pleasure and very insightful. So I'm sure our listeners will enjoy it very much. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in, for sure. And keep being excited about the next episode, because we will be back in a week and the Vaping Unplugged podcasts are published once a week. So we hope we're going to see you in the next episode. And thank you for tuning in right now, and vape on for sure.
So yeah, Lisa mentioned the Good Cop meeting that we held for COP10 in Panama. That was in February 2024. And we'll be doing the same again for COP11 for their upcoming meeting in Geneva in November of this year. All are welcome. If you're consumers and you're in the area in Geneva, come and see us. We've booked the hotel. It's going to be bigger than last time. We have more voices to speak up, more experts, more consumers who are going to talk about their experiences and why these products should be promoted by the likes of the WHO and other organisations. So look forward to that, and look forward to more news. And we might see you there.